that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, oh, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to The Geeky Bubble. I'm your host, Jonah, and with me is the record to my gonky, my mom, Maria.
Hello. Today, we're going to discuss the season 3 episodes, Identity Crisis, Point of No Return, and Juggernaut.
That's right. So last time... We didn't record it last time because I was sick. I was not feeling well. I had an episode of vertigo. And if you've ever experienced vertigo, you know that it's an awful, terrible experience. And if you haven't, then you're very blessed. And I envy you. I envy. But before we dive into the episodes, I wanted to highlight this email that we got from Jennifer, specifically the part about text views on Assad. So remember last time we were talking about like the hypothetical, like how would he have reacted to seeing Assad? So Jennifer said, I can see him questioning her why she's helping them by bringing up her assassin history because that's all they know about her. I think Tech would have a much more less assumptuous train of thought since in season 2, meeting Romar changed his worldview that not all residents of the Separatists were bad people that chose this life. So yeah, that's a good point. I completely forgot about his interaction with Romar, who was a former, who was a Serenian, whose planet had fallen under Separatist rule. So yeah, that's a fantastic point. I'm glad you emailed us and let us know your perspective on that. So Mommy, since we last chatted about The Bad Batch, there have been 3 episodes. Yeah. So what were your overall thoughts about these episodes? Was there anything that stood out to you that struck a chord with you?
Yeah, can we pick it up?
Pick up the speed?
Yeah, like how many episodes we have left?
We have 3 episodes left.
Gosh.
you want them to go.
You see, intense episodes tend to make my heart go boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not good.
No, it's not.
So I want a less intense episode, more prolonged.
Oh,
so
if we
only have 3 episodes left, oh my God, they're going to be packed.
Yeah, it's going to be. But that's the opposite of what you want. You say that you want them to go faster, but you also don't want them to go faster?
No, like, I want the story to, like, jump to where it should be.
Oh,
know, like,
I see. It's taking its little time to get there.
I see.
Man. I gotcha. So now you think that when we get to the next episode, it's just going to be like a domino effect. It's just everything's going to fall.
If we get
quickly.
Something next episode, because, you
we
know.
Get it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm personally shocked that we have 3 episodes left, and Omega and the Bad Batch still don't know why the Empire is interested in her. Like, that's wild, the fact that they still don't know. I mean, Omega is starting to get that now with answers from Hemlock, or at least the vague answers he's giving her. And I get why, because there's so much secrecy around this project, Project Necromancer. So Hemlock isn't going to spill every single detail, but it is super frustrating. And not necessarily in a bad way, it's just generally frustrating. And I really wonder how this is all going to end, because right now everything's up in the air. I have no idea what's going to happen.
I'm pretty sure. I feel like they're never going to know what Necromancer, the project, is.
Probably not, because then that would be crucial information that they could feed to Rex, and Rex, you know, becomes part of the rebellion, and they would know, they would then know what the Emperor is up to. And that's information that really doesn't get known until much later on.
And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just getting there too slow, and it's just going to blow up, and it's going to blow up my heart with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will see. And so one of the things that happened in Identity Crisis was Hemlock staring into an open cryopod. And he was holding his data pad, and on it there was this profile of a humanoid covered in full body armor. So, you know, we see it again later on in his office on his table. And I was wondering whether that stood out to you, whether this was just like something that you were like, oh, it's whatever.
No, I really didn't pay attention to the data pad.
Oh, okay.
Because most of the time it doesn't say anything.
That's true.
You know? Yeah. I tend to look at it when it's related to Omega, because mm-hmm. I want to see what's there. But I normally don't pay attention to the data pad itself.
Yeah, so. there was the CX operative, the one with the oval shaped helmet, and then he switched to the screen that had a humanoid figure that had like sort of a triangular sort of helmet. It was different than what we had seen before, at least in my opinion. So yeah, I'm curious what that could be. See, now that I could see as being tech, because like what we had brought up episodes ago about brain activity,
yeah,
like that could possibly be tech. CX2, I'm sorry, but that's not tech. There's 3 episodes left. There's no way they're going to reveal that to be tech and then have a resolution for that storyline. I mean, he showed up for 5 seconds in Juggernaut and he was not acknowledged at all for the rest of the episode. So yeah, I that cryopod and whatever's inside of that armored figure, that I could see being tech. And then I was thinking, oh man, remember they captured the Zillow Beast, and the Zillow Beast has that impenetrable armor, like skin or whatever it is. And so what if they found a way to create armor based on that?
Yeah.
So yeah, right?
Yeah.
I was like, is there a connection here? Am I just making stuff up? I don't know. But yeah, very, very interesting things to think about. And I don't know whether they're going to flesh those out here with there being just 3 episodes left. So it could be that this might show up later on down the line. Who knows? But Emery believes she's earned the right to become the new chief scientist. She said, "Don't you trust me? I've spent years working by your side." And she also said, "I believe I have earned it." So I was wondering, why do you think Hemlock hadn't included her in Project Necromancer before? Because we see that in the vault, there are scientists up there, people that we've seen on occasion in the hallways. So they have access to Project Necromancer. So why not give Emery that level of access? Why hasn't she been given that before?
I don't know, but she's so naive. Because she really, like, for her to be exposed to as much as she has been, even if it's not the full story, mm-hmm. and to still believe in whatever cause or whatever it is that Hemlock is doing. Come on, girl.
Wake up. Smell the flowers, like, man.
Yeah, the flower, the coffee, everything. Like the full breakfast.
You're funny, mommy. But yeah, she does really need to figure out what she's going to do. And I'm hoping that we'll see that in the coming episodes.
She definitely has an abandonment issue.
Oh yes, she brings that up.
She brings that up like with Nala say, like, what you gonna discard? Like, you discarded me, you know?
Yes, yeah.
So she has that, and that may be why she's so loyal to.
Yes. Hemlock.
Hemlock. You know, I was going to say, what's his name?
Yeah. I've done that before, too. Because she does get told, limit your personal interactions with the specimens because they're only assets. And we see that she starts to experience sympathy, maybe even empathy because of what she went through as a kid. And yeah, like you said, she told Nalase, their children, like I was your plan to discard them, too, which implies that that's what Nalase did to her.
Or that she feels did to her.
Yeah. So it sounds like she harbors some sort of resentment toward Nalase for how she had been treated as a child. Maybe she wasn't as special as Omega, or she didn't serve the purpose that Nala Se was looking for.
What if it wasn't Nala Se at all?
True.
What if Ichi was just taken because of the special aspect of the fact that she was a female clone? And she was taken and basically told a lie, because we know these kids in the vault have been told lies.
Right.
They're not going home. So now she's grown up thinking Nala Se discarded her.
Yeah, and then it sounds like this sort of explains, like, her, like you said, loyalty. She might have developed some loyalty, a sense of loyalty and respect towards Hemlock, because Hemlock saw some potential in her. So I like that the title, Identity Crisis, is referring to her.
Yeah.
Because she sees the test subjects as children, but everyone else sees them as specimens. And this distinction in her mind, as well as her own experience, is causing her to, like, waver a bit.
Yeah, I think her trauma has been too big that she's not even looking for, you know, what is there, what you probably could have seen already about Hemlock and his attitude and the way he treats people and so-called specimens.
Yeah, and then in addition to what Hemlock showed her earlier, he said, in addition to the assets in the sub-level containment chamber, you will be given access to the vault. So I wonder how many more secrets are hidden down there.
Yeah.
Because we know the Zillow Beast is one of those secrets. But I don't know if you paid attention to the hallway. Like, there were several doors. So who knows what's behind those doors. So, yeah, it sounds like it's more than just the vault down there. It's more than just these four sensitive kids, that Zillow Beast. What else are they cooking back there that's scary to think about? Yeah, good stuff. So we finally get into the vault, and it's this very sterile, white, headache-inducing because of the lights, the white lights. Place and were you surprised to see that it was children as test subjects rather than because I was expecting adults.
Yeah, me too. But then it makes sense that they're kids.
Yeah. I was like, it makes sense because in the Clone Wars they were taking babies to experiment on them.
Yeah, and an adult Jedi are rare. And
yes,
they don't practically exist. Whichever exists, they're, like, scattered and hidden and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it sounded more logical that they will be children.
Right, yeah. And then Eva, who we meet, is her designation number is SP-54. SP, I'm imagining, is for specimen. So she's SP-54, and Jax, I think, was SP-32. So it implies that there have been at least 54 specimens.
And again, I go to Emery's position. Like, are you not questioning where are all these specimens?
Yeah.
And we know that she starts sort of questioning a little bit because she asked Bane.
Yes.
How many of these have you found?
Right. She was questioning him, getting a little bit more information.
And he tells her, like, making questions like that.
Reveal more. Yeah.
So, in a way, sort of warning her.
Yes. Yeah. Keep your curiosity at bay there. So, Hemlock eventually said, as you know, M-Count cannot be directly replicated from the source. However, Nala Se knew of another way, which is why she aided in Omega's escape. The young clone's blood is the only binder that's proven to be compatible with their DNA to recreate their M-count levels. So that was a very succinct way to put it. I was like, oh, okay, that's that was a great little summary of what Omega has. But I also wonder whether this applies to Boba. Like, would his blood also act as a binder?
It could be that in the clone process, in the development of the clone process, this was an afterthought.
Yeah, maybe.
With Nala Se.
Yeah.
And it was Omega who she experimented into.
Tweaked.
To make this happen.
Yeah. So it's probably not the case for Boba.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the thought came to my mind. Going back to the conversation that Emery and Nala Se had, it also brought up some interesting similarities between Omega and Emery, because Emery said they're children, that they don't belong here. And Omega feels the same way about the clone troopers. You know, they don't belong there. So yeah. I liked how that little similarity popped up there. And then Nala Se went on to say, no, they do not. They don't belong here. But none of this was my choice. I had to protect Omega. Which is an interesting line, because if you think about it, the clone troopers, for example, being taken as experiments, they wouldn't be there had Omega been
outed
from the beginning. I didn't think about that before, because all of these experiments taking place is because they want to find that match. And Nala Se knew it was Omega the entire time.
But then you're giving up an even bigger evil.
Yeah, of course. So, you know.
It's like the lesser of two evils.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. And then Nala Se said, I did what I could. Now they will look to you. What will you do, Emery? And Emery kind of looked helpless in that moment. And she said, there's nothing I can do. I don't have that kind of power. And Nala Se replied, don't you? Which was really interesting, because I was like, didn't you have that kind of power, Nala Se?
Yeah.
But I also love that line, because it helps Emery realize that she does have some power to do something here, not just because of the position she has now, but because she has access to Hemlock.
Yes, and that's the point, because Nala Se may have had some power,
right?
But she didn't have his Hemlock's trust, his ear.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the connection that Emery has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's something that she could potentially take advantage of. She might also know some of his weaknesses. Who knows? Maybe that hand, the hand that's covered in a glove the whole time, is a potential weakness that we don't know about yet. So, and then we also find out that Emery kept the straw Lula doll. So I know we had talked about that before, whether Emery had kept it or not. So I'm glad that, you know, she did, and that this doll continues to provide some sort of comfort to another child. And I like how it was similarly set up too. When she gives it back to Omega, it's on the floor and Omega's sitting on the bed. And then when she gives it to Eva, it's also on the floor while Eva's sitting on the bed. So I thought that was a really interesting comparison. So an interesting development that happened during this episode was Tarkin randomly showing up. And when I heard his name, I was like, oh, okay. So there could be something within the Imperial hierarchy that could bring Tantus down. And not necessarily bombs and explosions and things of that nature. Or it could be that. And then Tarkin could be like, yeah, we're not going to support that program anymore. So he said, questions have been raised regarding the financial impact your facility is having upon Imperial resources. And now additional funds have been diverted at your request. And Hemlock ultimately says it is worth the expenditure. And I like that Tarkin ends that conversation with, you had better hope so. If this project fails to yield proper results, it won't bode well for your operation or for you. And I really do wonder whether the ultimate shutdown of Tantus is because of budgetary concerns.
Yeah.
and lack of funding.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious to think about.
The almighty buck.
Yeah, I know, right? Because that's something that, you know, even libraries today, we have to constantly worry about whether we're going to get the funding that we need to support programs and enhance our collections and whatnot. So I just found it hilarious that could be the nail on the coffin. Okay. But yeah, we will see. And of course, there was the storyline with Cad Bane abducting that child, which was really heartbreaking, because I don't know whether that mother is going to see that her child ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the part that really, like, when I finished that episode, I was crying, because that was the part that really got me. The fact that maybe Eva and Jax remember their homes because of their age, but this little baby is not going to remember anything like that. And
it takes us to Grogu.
Yeah.
What so we've seen.
With a little baby Grogu. So it's really distressing. And I know the entire episode was distressing, but that part really got me. And I know some people online were comparing this abduction to what the Jedi used to do and how it's the same. But it's totally not the same,
it's
you
not
guys.
The same.
Totally not the same. You know, there was consent. There was a conversation yeah. that happened prior to that.
It wasn't like parents were shot and probably killed while their child was being taken.
Yeah. You know, the Jedi would approach these people and, you know, tell them that they're child had force abilities that needed to be trained. Maybe there was a little bit of like, you don't have a choice in this. This has to happen sort of a thing, depending on the Jedi who visited that parent. But for the most part, you know, the parents would willingly give their children up for being raised as part of the Jedi Order. So yeah, definitely not the same. I saw those conversations happening. I'm like, guys, come on. And so moving on, you know, we have the next episode, Point of No Return, and which is such a great title because it really does, it's straightforward. This is the point where you cannot go back to how things were. You know, they won't be able to live on this beautiful island again. The island itself won't ever be the same again now that the Empire has descended upon it. So things are going to be different moving forward. And I was wondering whether that was the impression you got from that title and from this episode.
Yeah, this is the point where it just, this has to happen.
Yeah.
They have to find Tantus. They have to stop it because there's no way going back and there's no way of keeping Omega safe if this place continues.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a very significant point in the series to be like, yeah, things are not going to be the same ever again. So in the previous episode, we learned that CX-2 tracked down a Trandoshan and pulled information out of her regarding Fee. And that's Cid,
yeah.
essentially. So the fact that he said pulled information out of this Trandoshan, do you think it means that she wasn't willingly sharing that information or that he somehow was able to get it without any issue?
Cid probably said no and hold on as much as, you know, she could, but in the end, she just gave it up.
Right.
We do know Cid will do the right thing up to the point where the right thing is no longer beneficial to her.
Right. Yeah.
So
it was interesting that they went that route. But yes, so in this particular episode, Point of No Return, it started off with Omega adding Lula and Tech's goggles to the Archeum. And that was really sweet. That was a really sweet thing to do. I mean, from our perspective, we know it was being done because the Marauder was going to get destroyed. But from an in-universe perspective, they were leaving a piece of themselves behind in a place that collects cultural remnants, things that are of personal value that are worth preserving. And I also thought leaving Lula behind was symbolic because it's sort of like Omega leaving behind a part of her childhood, something that made her happy, and then preserving that aspect of her childhood within the Archeum. So I was just like, oh, this is so sad.
And one nice way to show that when it comes to culture, it's not just the priceless artifacts that matter. The daily little things that make the people that make that culture are as important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it's somewhat random, but as your friendly neighborhood archivist, if you have something that's of historical value, you could, you know, check with your local library, check with your archive to see whether that's something that they collect, especially if it's something that you're thinking about throwing away or doesn't really serve a purpose for you anymore. Always check in with those institutions because they might have a collection policy in place and they might collect those kinds of things. So you don't want to toss it away without making sure that absolutely no one else wants it because it could serve a purpose, a different purpose, or provide insight down the line. So a lot of things go down in this episode, like the Marauder being destroyed, Wrecker nearly dying, the Empire descending upon Pabu, and then Omega giving herself up. So let's talk about the Marauder being destroyed. So Mami, on a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being it's whatever, and 10 being I'm pissed off, what's your number?
I would say 6 or 7.
Okay.
Yeah. I treat it like a pain. You know, when you go to the doctor's office with a pain.
Oh, yeah.
How high is your pain? It's not killing me.
Right.
It's not non-existent, but it's bothering me.
Right. You know? For me, it's not really the pain. It's more of the annoyance, like the level of, I'm so mad because why did they have to destroy this? Because I know last time we talked about, you know, iconic ships and how the Millennium Falcon continues to live.
Yeah.
But some of our favorite ships get destroyed, like the Mandalorian ship and now this one. Thankfully, the Ghost has not been axed. If that ever happens, I know last time I said it, we riot. We riot. But again, it's that whole point of no return. This is the point where, unfortunately, things are going to be different. And this is that is an aspect that's at play here. And then Wrecker nearly dying. I did not like that. I was not happy with poor Wrecker being almost kicking the bucket there. No, not happy.
They already took one.
I know.
What's the purpose of taking more?
And unrelated, but in the description of this episode, there's a link to this TikTok video my friend Elisa found about Wrecker. And I wanted to share it because it's really insightful. And it's a video by someone called Genalysis. Some people have said on Twitter, like, the show is about to end. Where's Wrecker's character development? I haven't seen Wrecker get that kind of development. But if you watch this video, please do, because it has an incredible breakdown of Wrecker's character and the development he's had from the Bad Batch arc in the Clone Wars to the present. It basically states that Wrecker was sort of like the kid in the group, and his brothers enabled that kind of behavior because it was almost like preserving his childlike qualities. But when Omega enters the group, she's the one who's the actual child. So that's when he becomes like the older brother, the mentor figure to her. And then he's the one to also help center Hunter after they lose Tech. So you really do see Wrecker's character grow in the progression he goes through. And it just wasn't center of attention, but it was there.
Yeah. And one thing, people tend to put too much emphasis on certain behaviors as the line between being a child and being an adult. And the truth is, you don't have to stop having those childlike qualities to be mature.
Right,
you know? And this is Wrecker. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always going to show those childlike qualities because that's innate in him. Mm-hmm. That's who he is. Mm-hmm. But he has grown and he has matured within those parameters.
Yeah, I love Wrecker.
Yes.
So let's talk about Omega giving herself up. So I liked the conversation between Omega and Crosshair because she reminded him of the bigger mission, of the bigger picture, sort of like how he reminded her at the beginning of the season about the bigger picture. And I liked the comparison of those two moments. And how he was technically the little kid.
Yeah.
And Omega had to be the older sibling. Speaking sense and speaking logically. And I knew Omega, I knew that she was going to get captured. It was going to happen. It was inevitable. And I think I said that way back when. I also said that they also had to have a plan in place for that eventual capture. But there was no freaking plan in place. There was barely a plan. The Hunter was in the water. Crosshair couldn't get the tracker on time on the ship because the ship, you know, started heading off. And then Wrecker was out cold. So it's a bit frustrating because you're like, dang it. Because if the tracker had landed on the ship, at least we would have had that small little victory, that glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, why do you think they had to have Crosshair fail in that moment, because we know they were going through their meditation sessions. He was improving his hand, the tremors in his hand. So this would have been like the great moment of him recovering from that.
I think that it has to do with how Crosshair's timeline started to twist and change. Mm. Rampart being the one that basically betrayed his view of the Empire and what the Empire represented, and taken away and to jail. You know, it's sort of like we see things starting to pop up into Crosshair's vision, and Crosshair starting to think about those things that are popping up. What is happening here, you know?
Gotcha.
And, you know, sort of like he knows that Rampart knows about Tantus, but then we see that hesitation of him not having told anybody because of the fact that it was basically Rampart who... It's like he's the center of the many things that happens to Crosshair.
I see. So he had to sort of reunite with Rampart to...
And just face that part. You know, and now he's there and he's going to have to deal with Rampart.
I gotcha. Okay, that kind of changes my perspective a bit, which I'll bring up in a moment. But to touch on what you were just talking about, Crosshair was holding the information about Tantus. He also withheld information about the clone operatives and didn't say anything until it was too late. Is this something you'd excuse because of what he'd experienced, or is enough enough? You know, like, you need to stop withholding information, things that could have been relevant or important.
Well, the thing is that relevant and important at the moment is a matter of perspective.
It could be from a certain point of view, mommy. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
It could be relevant to you, but not necessarily relevant to me.
I gotcha.
You know?
That's so Star Wars of you.
Yeah, and if he is trying to avoid... You see, we know Crosshair is suffering from some form of PTSD. And he has to start facing what is it that got him.
The evils of his past, yeah.
So this is how, you know, you avoid things you don't want to think about. So whether you want to say that he's done it consciously or unconsciously, it doesn't matter. The underlying issue is that he's avoiding confrontation with those parts of his life that are the ones that have taken him to the point where he is now.
Yeah, you're right. That is an underlying thing with him.
Yeah. So I see it as normal that he's still doing it.
Gotcha.
And who knows? Although there's only 3 episodes left, but who knows what else, you know?
Yeah. But going back here a little bit, the fact that you said that Crosshair, that it's important for him to meet with Rampart because of the whole confrontation thing, he needs to face up to his past in that way. Initially, I was wondering why the writers or why the creators had to go the route of Crosshair failing to place the tracker and them having to find Rampart. Because I was telling my friend, I feel like the next episode after Juggernaut is going to determine whether that writing decision was smart or not smart. Because had the creators done it so that Crosshair had made the shot, at least we would have gotten that little victory, that little glimmer of hope. Like, okay, they can get the coordinates to this place finally. But if the route with Rampart leads them to Tantus and nothing else is gained from that particular route with Rampart, then what was the point? So, yeah, in the next episode, Into the Breach, I wonder if that's going to determine whether this decision to have Crosshair fail to place a tracker was a good creative decision or not. But the fact that you said it's important for Crosshair's development to face Rampart, that changes it for me, because I'm like, okay, so they could only just get the coordinates to Tantus, But if it also helps Crosshair
get over that.
Yeah. Then it was important for him not to get that tracker on the ship.
They're going to need the Crosshair that took over all those droids in that episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That Crosshair is what they need.
That's what they need.
And for him to do that is to confront Rampart. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. Thank you. Because literally, that's what I had written this this short essay out to my friend. Like, what was the purpose? What was the reason? Is it going to be a good one? Are they only going to get Coronis to Tantus? If that's the only thing they get, then what was the point?
And as you mentioned this, I usually watch the episodes twice just because I like to have ideas fresh. And the second time I watch it right before we record.
Yeah.
And you did bring this point up. And I started thinking, like, okay, three episodes left. There has to be some. And that's about basically the only thing I can come up with is the fact that we need that Crosshair that is like a
1,000%.
Yeah, 1,000% a battalion in one man, you know?
And it reminds me, in the Bad Batch arc, one of the things that Hunter says to describe Crosshair is something about, like, he can hit a mark 10,000 clicks away or something like that. That's probably a ridiculous number I just threw out. But it's something like an expert of Crosshair's level could achieve. And so, obviously, he has not been that Crosshair. So we need him to get to that point because it might be crucial for what's to come.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see it. Oh, you got me so excited.
So that's going to be some conversations in the next episode.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Star Wars, don't fail me now.
I know, right? Don't fail us. Don't fail us. But speaking of Rampart, I honestly can't believe that's one of the things I actually got right. So, like, back in March, I said, I have this wild theory. What if they go to Rampart because he's the only one that has interacted with the clone operatives? What if he's like a last resort sort of a thing? And it turned out to be that he was a last resort. Yeah. So I was like, man, this rarely happens. Let me have my win. And I actually feel a little bit powerful. So maybe I should be more wrong in the future. So that way I can like temper that feeling. So Juggernaut, this episode, it took me a little while to realize why it was called Juggernaut. I was trying to figure it out, but in talking with my friend Elisa, she said, oh, it's because of the wheeled vehicle. It's a Juggernaut. It basically plowed through everything. And I also didn't know this because I had to look up the origin of the word. But Juggernaut actually originates from India. I didn't realize that. It comes from the word Jagannath, and it means a very large and unstoppable force. It's also the name of a deity, of an Indian deity, and his name means Lord of the Universe, which I don't think applies to this episode, but I thought it was interesting. So Omega's brought to Emery in the lab at the start of this episode, and once they're alone, Emery said, I'm glad you're safe, to which Omega's like, am I? I don't think I am. And then Emery kind of reminds me of, because I love this movie, she kind of reminds me of Rapunzel in Tangled, because for so long, Mother Gothel warned Rapunzel about the dangers of leaving the tower, of the things that she would encounter. If she went out there, she wouldn't survive. So to Emery, I think Mount Tantus is safe because that's sort of like what Hemlock has led her to believe. And she's also like this little bird who's been locked up in her cage for too long. And that's actually a thing. I didn't realize this, but this is actually a thing that birds experience. So birds can develop cage-bound behavior. And this is a condition in which they're afraid to leave the safety of their cage. Even if you leave the door open, they wouldn't leave because they've been in that cage for so long. So I know she's left the facility to pick up the baby, but it's not the same as leaving and being on your own.
Yeah.
So do you think that's what's happening with Emery? Is she essentially cage bound?
Yeah, I could see that. But then again, like, I have to go back to the fact, yeah, okay, so she doesn't know much about the world out there, but within the world she's in, she has seen things.
Yeah, things that should innately be like, yeah, this is wrong.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, come on, woman, like,
snap open out your of eyes. It.
Yeah, snap out of it.
Yeah. Doesn't Cher say that in something?
Yeah.
Snap out of it. but yeah, I do want that to happen with Emery. And I'm sure we'll see it happen.
Hopefully. Yeah. Other than Crosshair, it would be one of the biggest character pinnacles.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes. I can imagine that being like a clapping moment for me. Whenever it manifests.
Woo! You know?
Yeah. Like, finally. Sophie makes a reappearance, and I loved it when she said, Tech told me about your sparkling personality.
I love Fee. She has this way of describing.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I like how that implies that she and Tech hung out for a bit and talked about things.
Yeah.
Things that, you know, clearly meant something to him. The fact that he talked about Crosshair.
Yeah, brown eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm still hurting about that one. It's like every time I hear brown eyes, that the brown eyes or Tech, it's like, why?
And actually, I completely forgot about this, but I don't know if you remember the episode in The Mandalorian where they had to do a prison break or something. I forget what the purpose was. It's been so long now. But they also had to be in a truck, in an armored truck, and someone, I forget, it might have been Mayfeld, who called them brown eyes. So I thought that was neat. I know that episode had the best clone joke. So that's the one thing I remember the most out of that episode. But yes, I like that Fee continues to be a genuinely good person. Like, she doesn't expect a form of payment from them or an exchange for services of some kind. Like, she helps them because she wants to, and that's really rare to see in a person. And it's a real shame that even I can't help but question people like that, because you can't help question their motivation. It's rare to find that pure, selfless motivation in people. Like, are you really doing this because you're selfless, or is it because there's something else that you want out of it, sort of a thing? And I like that Fee appears to be a genuinely selfless person.
Yes, yes. It doesn't help the fact that she has a reputation of being a pirate, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So that could be the reason why, you know, I'm
You know. But it's also understandable, because then in order for her to do what she does need that reputation
to be out there.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know? And you also don't want people to take advantage.
Yeah, so.
So you do have to have some sort of boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think Rampart is referring to when he said, no one knows the coordinates to Tantus, it was designed that way, but I might know how to get around that? Like, how do you imagine they're going to get those answers? Like, is this a person that he might know? A facility?
I think this is I go back to what I was thinking. I think this is how Crosshair is going to get over his hump, because he's going to have to go back to the Imperial service.
Mm. Oh.
Like
an undercover sort of thing.
Yeah, they're going to have to hit some facility or something. They're going to have to go in disguise to get the information.
Oh, yeah. I can totally see that. Oh, I'm so excited. But yeah, I can see that playing out that way. Interesting.
Because like the way he said it, I know a way, you know, he didn't point to one specific person.
Yes, he just said, I might know how to get around that.
Around the fact that Tantus coordinates the place is hidden.
Yeah.
It may be hidden from most, but not everybody, because we know Tarkin knows.
Yes.
We know other members of whatever know. So How do you get to that info?
Yeah. Interesting. And do you think Rampart will meet his end and will Crosshair be the one to do it? Because it's not like Rampart is like Kallus or other Imperials who've turned away from who they used to be. Rampart is still very much out for himself, and he doesn't hold remorse for anything he's done.
No. This is where he may end up meeting his end. I don't think it's going to be
Crosshair. No, I think that has to be like...
This is where Crosshair has to like confront his decisions and what he has thought of and how the way he thought informed the decisions that he made, you know? So killing him,
you would have to take the higher road.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Crosshair would do.
Yeah.
But I still doesn't eliminate whether Rampart dies some other way.
Yeah.
Through his own greed or what have you. But yeah, that it'll be interesting to see what ultimately becomes of that character. And so other notes, like I know some people were upset because Identity Crisis didn't feature the Bad Batch at all. I think it was the first episode in which the characters didn't show up. But like we've explained in the podcast before with other similar episodes, that episode helped set the stage for what's to come. I also love Emery. So I'm glad that we got to see more of her and her growing concerns in the work she's doing and how that identity crisis could potentially help Omega in the end. So I think it was a very crucial thing to incorporate at this point in time. I also really love the head turn that Hunter did right after the explosion of the destruction of the Marauder, and they fished out Gonki and Wrecker from the water. You have like this ominous moment where Hunter's head is turning and then he looks up and is there, and there's the Star Destroyer. I thought that was a really cool moment. Oh, and then Hunter stealing the gunship. That was so sexy. I mean, ultimately, you know, he ended up in the water. But man, that was so... He was just a one-man show.
Yeah.
And then when the Empire invaded, I thought they were going to burn the Weeping Tree.
Yes, thank God.
I know. I was so happy that didn't happen because I thought it was going to be sort of like the White Tree of Gondor in The Lord of the Rings when it burns. I thought that was going to happen, but thankfully that didn't. And I also thought that the Empire was leaving because they were going to do orbital bombardment. And I'm like, no, they better not do this. Thankfully, yeah, I think Pabu is unscathed for the most part, although I didn't see people, so I'm worried about the people. Maybe they're just hiding somewhere. I don't know. But I guess hopefully we'll get some resolution to that. And then I love Fee when she does the stealth move.
Yeah.
into the planet.
Oh,
that was so cool.
I just love the way that they animated it because it shows every moment, like when she lets go of the gas, the pedal, whatever it is, and she puts her foot behind it to hold it, and then she moves it forward. These are things you don't really have to show, but the fact that you show them adds so much.
It really does.
To the whole moment, like...
Yeah, I love the detail of Hunter's helmet floating in the air as they were falling. And I love that people on Twitter have taken to call it the fee fall.
Uh-huh.
So like a free fall, but a fee fall. And then a Rampart being tossed around like a sack of potatoes, like you said.
I kept
using the expression like a rag doll, being tossed around like a rag doll. I thought that was hilarious.
He was thrown like a sack of potatoes.
Like,
boom.
Like, that's what he deserved, really.
And I love how when he wakes up, you know he's hurting.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
It was so good. I remember reading online that the inspiration behind that was like Weekend at Bernie's, the movie. Which I actually have never seen, but I've only seen clips and pieces here.
You had to see that movie.
And I've also never seen, this is random, but speaking of movies I've not seen, Apollo 13 is a movie I've not seen. Because there was someone online who was talking about it recently, Nancy, and I was just like, oh, I have not seen that movie. That's something I need to fix. So yeah, there's a lot of things I haven't watched that you'd think I would have given my age.
Remember, Jonah, it's Rachel's favorite movie.
Yeah, Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Bernie's. That's right. We're referring to the episode in Friends. I think it's the one with the embryos because they're doing a game of who gets the apartment. And one of the questions is, what's Rachel's favorite movie? Dangerous Liaisons, but it's actually Weekend at Bernie's. Yeah, I've not seen Dangerous Liaisons either. So. But anyway, we've gone off track here. The younger clones, the little cute clones, yeah. And they're cute, adorable, and they're being so cute and adorable in their snazzy new clothes. I thought they were so cute. I was so happy to see them, you know, enjoying some, you know, being kids.
Yes, and how they at a moment's notice, they become soldiers.
Little soldiers, yes. Yeah. It's like inherent. It's within their DNA. And I still, again, don't think that CX2 is tech. I just don't see it happening with 3 episodes left. But I do, again, think that it's completely possible that some version of tech is in that cryopod. As an armored individual, I don't know. We will see. I don't think they would even like dive into too much into that in the next 3 episodes.
Don't break my heart.
I know.
Star
I'm sorry.
Wars, please don't break my heart.
But we will see. And then the next episode is called Into the Breach. And I think one of the stupidest things Hemlock could have done was to put Omega in the same room with those kids. Because you know Omega is going to empower Eva, Jax, and that anyone else who's in there. And Hemlock's going to regret it.
I did say that Hemlock's weakness was his sense of superiority and power. He thinks he knows everything, but he really does not.
I think you've met your match with Omega, man. Yeah, because I was like, oh, man, you're an idiot. Why would you put them in the same room? Now they're going to, like, unite against you. Especially with her knowledge of somewhat, you know, beginner's knowledge of the Force through Bungie, through Ventress, and just of her own curiosity, like, You've messed up. Yep. But that's it. Did you have any other thoughts about the episodes? Anything I might have missed?
No, this...
There was a lot to cover, and I just wanted to hit the major points and the funnier things that happened, but...
I'm just looking forward to the last 3.
Yes, that's right. The last 3 episodes. I hope that last episode is like a movie-long episode.
I'm going to start doing my meditation
to prepare
myself.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, that's it for today's episode. In our next episode, we'll be discussing Into the Breach.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.